Happy Monday, everybody. It's Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Coming up, Connor Riley's going to join us. We are also going to talk more about the Falcons. You will hear from a couple of guys after the game yesterday. Disappointing, to say the least. We did not show up. We didn't do anything particularly well. And now we head into the bye week. And we talked to Coach about this. This was the fear about heading into the bye week after an L. And now you've got extra time to think about it. And you're on a two-game losing streak. More to get to. The question for the Dogs is, how do they build after that impressive win over Tennessee? Let's talk Dogs. Connor Riley is here from Dog Nation. And Connor, thanks for joining us as always. This was impressive to be down at home 10-0 to a team defensively that was stout as Tennessee was, and then to see the resiliency of the Dogs play out the way it did. Beck throws two touchdowns, runs for another. Let's start there because we spent a lot of time this season talking about him. Was this his best game?
Not only do I think this is the best game of his season, but I think when you factor in the stakes, how limited they are at wide receiver and running back right now, I thought this was the best game of Carson Beck's career. You hear some of the way draft scouts, Todd McShay, et cetera, talk about him. This is the type of performance that Georgia fans, I think, thought they were going to get more frequently this year. He was great at attacking the middle of the field. He used his legs as a weapon in this game. I thought he really woke up when he got hit and took that 14-yard running and plowed his shoulder through a defender. And from there, he was sort of feeling like the player that we all thought he was going to be this season. Again, you know, he doesn't have Brock Bowers. He doesn't have Ladd McConkey. He doesn't have the same support system around him, but he elevated everyone on that offense on Saturday. And it's not a coincidence that that Georgia gave up zero sacks and Carson Beck goes out there and plays his best game. So I think there's, you know, some trust that has finally been developed in terms of what's out there and what he's working with. And you showed that in the biggest stage so far this season, with Georgia's season, in my opinion, effectively on the line, they were able to go out there and get it done and get a just simply massive, massive win for where they are at this point in the season.
You know, Connor, it was funny watching the game and watching that throw to Arian Smith. I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, you know, I mean, he puts it literally right in the perfect position. So, hey, if the wide receivers can't get it done, let's use the tight ends. Because still, I know that he's not Bowers, but Oscar Delp was highly recruited. You know, Lucky's been able to contribute. So I thought it was great from Bobo, the game plan. We've been killing Bobo. And the confidence you just talked about with Carson Beck to put those balls into some tight windows.
Yeah, the tight ends, I think because they're just so banged up at the wide receiver position now, like, it's finally like, hey, yeah, like let's get these tight ends more involved. And yes, you know, none of them are Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers, I think, had an NFL rookie record for catches for a tight end yesterday. Like, that guy is so clearly a 101. But, you know, that kind of production you saw, 10 catches, 130 yards, two touchdowns from the tight end room, that's the sort of stuff that I think you can look to see and use more and more again. Because Oscar Delp, so much of this was attacking a specific weakness in that Tennessee defense, and they went to it over and over again. And it really worked in that first half there. They've been able, I think, all season to scheme up explosive plays for Lawson Lucky, and he's been able to make them work in that regard. And then Benjamin Jurasik, having his best game as a Bulldog on Saturday as well, he's made leaps and bounds as a blocker in that sense. And that was where I think Georgia wanted him to improve the most, to get him on the field. But you saw on Saturday, some of those underneath routes, yards after catch, where Brock really feasted in the past, he excelled in that regard. So if he's able to block well enough, he's now in a spot to where he can be on the field enough and get those positional catches to where he can do some of the underneath stuff, the crossers, the drag routes, et cetera, and turn a 3-4 yard pass into a 15, 18 yard gain. So if they're able to get that out of their tight ends, again, not expecting to put Brock Bowers type numbers up every week, but contributions from all three of them, all three of those guys played at least 40 snaps. That's, I think, what it's going to have to look like for this Georgia offense moving forward.
How good was the defense when you talk about them jumping out to that 10-point lead and then you really don't let them back in the game? They score, you know, a touchdown after that, and that's it.
Yeah, shutout in the second half. Georgia had 5 sacks on the night. You know, the run defense didn't start the game great, but I thought the adjustments that Glenn Schumann and this Georgia defense were able to make over the course of the game, and really, I think putting more of this game on Nico Iomiliava's shoulders, I still can't pronounce his name there, but putting more and more of the game on his shoulders, I think, helped Georgia in that regard. And as the Bulldogs were ultimately able to get a lead, you saw that Tennessee just lacked the skill players around Nico, I think, to really take advantage of that out there. And so it's a credit to Georgia. It's a credit to them for, I think, really keeping him in the pocket and not letting him use his athleticism. And there were a few times where he did try and scramble. They did try him on designed runs. And when they ran him, Georgia made it a point to pop him and hit him hard. He was coming into the game with a concussion, had been listed as questionable. He's not exactly the most sturdily built quarterback that Georgia has ever seen. He's not a Jalen Milroe type who can take those sort of beatings. And so I thought Georgia made it a point to make Nico think about running and taking off, and he didn't do that all that often. Mm. And right now he's just not a good enough quarterback, and that Tennessee scheme is not good enough to beat Georgia from the pocket. And I think that's a huge reason why Georgia was able to find a way to claw back and get a win in that game after, you know, end of the first quarter, offense is getting booed off the field.
Right.
They make so many big adjustments and play the game that I think a lot of us thought that Georgia was capable of playing all season.
Connor Riley from Dog Nation, guys, after the Dogs get it done, I kind of got a kick out of Kirby using the platform of the post-game interview to say, yeah, man, basically, you know, all right, Indiana, Ohio State, you come down here and run that BS schedule. Penn State as well. But, I mean, you know what? You gotta do it in this day and age. I don't know if it resonates with the College Football Playoff Committee, but I don't think when you look at the strength of schedule, anyone should have a problem with what Kirby said.
Yeah, Kirby, in circumstances this year, has been a lot more candid, a lot more blunt in terms of sharing how he feels. And I think the College Football Playoff Committee criticism is an example of that. And it's going to be really interesting as we get in the stretch run here. And again, you know, so much of this, it's important to remember, these College Football Playoff rankings are a TV show. They don't matter, right, in my opinion, until we get to the final one. But I can understand why someone takes some value and some meaning from that. I think, you know, in the event that Georgia gets through this regular season 10-2, and they have the resume that they have, wins over Tennessee, wins over Texas and Clemson, road losses at Alabama and Ole Miss, two teams that are potentially going to make the playoff as well. I don't know that there's a team out there that could do better than what Georgia did in this schedule. And, you know, the idea that they're going to have to potentially go on the road in the first round as opposed to like a Penn State or an Indiana, mm-hmm, getting a first round game at home simply because they don't play that many tough teams in the Big Ten. The only four teams ranked in the Big Ten are Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, and Indiana. The top of that conference is just not as deep. Whereas Georgia challenged himself in the non-con, they're going to play Tech. And like, if Tech gets a win over NC State this week, it's not out of the realm of possibility to see them maybe jump in at the end of the rankings there. They played a really difficult schedule. And because of that, I think that Georgia, at the end of the day, deserves to be rewarded at least with a home playoff game of some sorts. And so I think Kirby agrees with that, especially when you factor in the schedule and the road schedule that they had to play this year.
This whole Beck running thing, as we move forward, is this going to be a part of what they're asking him to do? Or was that just, you know, hey, if it's there, take it kind of deal?
I think it's probably somewhere in between the two where, you know, they're not going to run him like, say, Stetson did in the red zone or, you know, Lamar Jackson does with Todd Monken now with the Baltimore Ravens. I think it's one of those things that in select circumstances, third downs, like you saw on that red zone, that go-ahead touchdown there, you think the third down against Texas where he scrambles there in the fourth quarter, those situations, they're going to allow him to do that. And he, I think, has the wherewithal to know, like, hey, I'm not going to open myself up to more hits than I need to here. But it's clear that the Georgia offense benefits, just like I think any offense in general, the threat of a running quarterback. There's a reason why Georgia's defenses have always seemed to struggle with that. It just puts extra pressure on the defense. And with Georgia so limited right now around back in terms of the skill players that are healthy and out there and able to help them, he's good enough. He has a good enough running ability in my mind to where, like, that is something where Georgia maybe should, you know, give him more than, say, five carries in a game, but in select situations, third downs, red zone, encourage him to use his legs and push through and get a first down or a touchdown, as we saw on Saturday.
All right, with UMass coming up, are we going to see Gunnar Stockton? I mean, are we going to see any of the other quarterbacks in this game?
I think it's very important for Georgia to get up big early in this game. Like, look, UMass, they're starting quarterback. They fired their head coach this morning. This is a game where if you're Georgia, you get up big in the first half and you spend that second half getting some of those players that we don't get to see a lot. Not just Gunnar Stockton, who I think is going to throw passes and get him some reps, but Ellis Robinson, Nitro Tuggle, Sakobi White. Get some of those freshmen that we haven't had a chance to see play a whole lot and see what they can do against other competition. And while, they're probably playing better guys at Georgia in practice Monday through Thursday, there's still incredible value in going out there and showing that you can do it against someone else. And I know it's not the same caliber of competition, but I think in the course of Carson Beck's career, him coming in the 2022 Vanderbilt game in the second half and playing really well with the second string offense, I think really helped him take up the mantle of being Georgia's starting quarterback. I'm not saying Gunnar Stockton's going to do something similar against UMass on Saturday, but I do think that is something worth watching for, especially with how aggressive Georgia might choose to be with Gunnar Stockton back there at quarterback.
Hmm. Good stuff. As always, Connor, tell the people where they can find your stuff. Great win for the Dogs on Saturday night.
Yep, you guys follow me on Twitter, at KConnorRiley. We've got a ton of stuff coming out still.
Cool. All right, great stuff from Connor there. Certainly dog fans want to hear from you. We'll open up the phone lines also for Falcon fans coming up. Mike, I thought the 92-yard drive was the defining moment maybe of the season. 92 yards, it's the longest of the season, and Nate Frazier caps it off with a 2-yard touchdown. They punished Tennessee's defense, which hadn't been punished like that all year. And that, to me, was one of those drives where you go, this is what we expected this offense to look like when they needed it.
Again, when you look at it, 87 yards, 57 yards for a field goal, 75 yards for a touchdown. You talked about it, man. This is Georgia doing things that Tennessee just couldn't do.
Coming up, we got a lot more to dive into, including your phone calls at 404-726-0929. Big O, we're going to take a few. Falcon fans, I want to know the one thing that is concerning to you. Mm. Not the eight things. The one thing.
The one thing.
That is concerning to you about our team right now. 404-726-0929. Hit us up. We're taking your calls next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. All right, let me give you some examples. Then we're going to jump on the phones at 404-726-0929. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Mike's got some guy talk coming up. And then we'll dive back in at 5 o'clock to all the things that went down in Denver. I'm asking you the one thing that's concerning to you. For Mike, it's the defense and the sacks, right? The lack thereof. For me, it's our quarterback not having thrown a touchdown pass the last 2 weeks. It's concerning.
I mean, the offense has got to be good to make up for the poorness of the defense. So I'm with you, brother. You said I can only pick one. So I'm would be 1B is yours. I'm with you. It's got to be both.
All right, let's get to JP on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. JP, thanks for dialing us up. It's Dukes and Bell. Hey, man, what's your one concern right now?
Hey, man.
What's going on?
Hey, man. Yeah, this is my thing, guys. For once, I'm following the coaches, man. Because, see, every time we get a new regime, well, they feel like, well, we got a year to get this thing together, a year to get that together. But we got the talent for now. And another thing, Kirk Cousins, man, he cannot get out of there. And I'm asking y'all something. Is there any kind of way we can use – I know they ain't going to start playing, but any kind of way they can have both of them back there?
No, can't do that.
No,
because Penix isn't the most mobile guy either. If we're honest, he's mobile, but he's not more mobile than Kurt.
Here's the deal, JP. This is not the Steelers situation. You saw Justin Fields come in; they had packages for him. It's the first time we've seen them do that. Mm-hmm. That is simply a function of we're going to give you a lot more to look at for the playoffs. I don't think that's the norm.
Right.
And for us, it doesn't make any sense. I don't want to take the ball out of Kirk Cousins' hands necessarily. But if you're asking Penix to come in and be an RPO guy, I'm with Mike. That's not going to happen.
That's not his game.
And you're not going to jeopardize your future that way. I mean, I'm not going to get him banged up because, my starting quarterback is struggling right now.
He's a pocket – no, he did show and he did certainly surprise people at his workout for his pro workout at Washington that he was faster than people thought he'd be. Because remember, he has multiple knee issues.
It's 4-5.
But that's still not considered his game.
Let's talk to Xavier. Xavier, welcome in. You're on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Your one concern after yesterday's loss, where you at? Hey, man.
My one concern is the same concern before the season started, and we did the offseason transactions, and that's the future. I never believed that the way this team was built, it was going to be successful. The 2016 model really didn't make sense because you don't have a Julio Jones. You barely have a Mohamed Sanu. You don't have the coach. You don't have anything that resembles the 2016 offense. So we squandered a whole lot of draft picks the last couple of years. And we even tapped the two for next year for Judon. So I'm kind of concerned about our future. Come next year, we got to pay Kirk Cousins even more money to play next year.
Nah, it's 45, 45, and 10.
Correct.
I mean, it's 100 mil. I mean, it's the same as it was this year. But look, guys, they drafted Drake London to be, not Julio because Julio had the speed, but the way they're using him, he's more of a slot guy now than he was supposed to be like that guy, the X, however you want to define it. I like Darnell Mooney. Darnell's banged up now with a hamstring, so we're going to hopefully get him right after the bye, Carl. To me, you said it earlier. We talked about it, guys. Kyle Pitts only has 6 catches his last 3 games. So, I mean, you drafted all these players to be those guys. When you say Sanu and Julio and the skill set is there. You drafted those guys for that job. That we have those players.
Yeah, and with all due respect, Xavier, here's the deal. Let's live for now. I can't worry about next year. You know, we drafted some guys we thought were going to be a part of this defense. They're not available. I got to worry about right now. And if you're telling me that we're so screwed up for the future, I will tell you that that's not the case. Our cap situation is not going to hurt us. We're flexible. We can go spend money, and we will in the offseason. But I'm worried about right now. I want a damn winner right now. I want to get in the playoffs right now. I want to do something we haven't done in 7 years right now. I don't care about next year. So I understand that you're concerned about the future, but what about right now where we have this in front of us and we've done some work that have put us in a place where maybe, Mike, just maybe we can take a step forward and get to the playoffs?
Right. Now, look, they rolled the dice with Judon. They came up snake eyes. Judon, unless he somehow finds it in the next six remaining games, and it'll be along the lines of what Von Miller was when he came back and he was not 100%. That was according to Coach Ra, who coached him in L.A. Okay, that's one scenario. The other part of this is, just to play devil's advocate for a second, you know, if you felt we were this two or three pieces away, well, you need the quarterback. I get it. The Penix thing and the Cousins thing is kind of coming back to bite us now, because even though we did draft Braylon Trice and we did draft Ruka Roe and all that, Jared Verse is having some skills. But again, he was never, ever slotted in the eighth spot. So before guys start going down that road, I'll nip it in the bud. Anybody that was drafted for edge rush was never considered a top 10 pick.
No,
Leota.
He was the first guy off the board, Latu, and he was not even in the top 10. You're right.
Now, Verse does look great, though. I mean, Verse, he does fit the spot.
I can't judge Dorlus because we haven't seen him, but.
Oh, Braylon Trice, for sure.
Excuse me, Trice. I keep saying Dorlus. Yeah. Trice was a guy, or at least I thought, that could have this kind of season where you're talking about four sacks and some kind of impact defensively. But we can't judge him because he hadn't seen him. Let's talk to Johnny. Johnny, what's your one concern as we talk Falcons after that disappointing loss yesterday to the Broncos?
Hey, man.
Hey, man.
What's that, Johnny?
Mr. Forrest.
I can't hear you. Go ahead. Start over, Johnny. Give it to me. What are you concerned about? Start over.
If we're going to lose, at least if we put Tillis in, we have an excuse. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, but I mean, like, they got Cousins here for guys. Penix is not starting this year. Again, this is where now Cousins, because he hasn't thrown a touchdown in 2 weeks, now we're going to go to Penix. I get it. It's frustrating. But the plan here is for at least 2 years of Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, it's not happening. David, you're up next. David, give me the concern. That's not a concern, by the way. That's a statement. You want Penix. That's not a concern.
Yeah.
People, give me a concern. We're all sitting at home yesterday going, what the hell is this? This is not hard. What's a concern? David, you're up next. Hey, man.
Hey, man.
What's going on?
My concern is Jimmy Lake. I mean, Judon, everyone, by all means, on paper, our personnel is supposed to be better on defense. And I'm not sure if it's just the personnel that's just not performing. I think there's a reason Jimmy Lake has been all over the NFL. And that's my biggest concern.
It's fair.
Yeah, he's a guy that, again, it's the elements, and there's some similarities to what Dan Quinn's defenses look like. And I think that's what gives me pause at times where, you know, it's one thing, Carl, when you got like the corners. Again, last night we were jammed up with some injuries. But the linebackers, everybody's off the ball. The ball's coming out quick. You're not getting any pressure. When Bo Nix drops back to pass with the longer routes to develop, there's no heat on him. And that's been the story all season long. Guys, the stats do tell a story. Stats are not for losers, Coach Ra. Mm. We're the worst defense as far as edge rush. The only thing we're good at and we're middle of the pack is at run defense.
Yeah. So we got one guy saying, I want a combo package of Penix being out there and splitting time.
That's terrible.
And then we had another guy say, I want Penix. That's all I have to say.
That's not an option yet, boys. That's
a statement.
Yeah. You failed. You failed the first chance to be on the phone today, sports fans.
David, thank you for getting it and understanding exactly what we're talking about.
Jimmy Lake is a major concern.
That's fair.
He's one of Ra's dudes. And I wonder, you know, in the offseason, will he have the nuggets to look at this and say it didn't work and I got to move on?
All right, we'll try this again later in the show for those of you who didn't get a chance to get in. All right, Keaton, I'm sorry. We're running out of time. 404-726-0929. We'll open up the phones a little bit later on. Mike, what do we have coming up in Guy Talk?
How would you like to be a college football head coach? Job opening just posted on Indeed. We'll get into that. And who made the big loot off the Tyson-Paul fight? You get it. The House. Holy cow. I'll tell you about it next. Where to play is play. I had a question up there. It's not a poll question, just guys riffing on it. I said, what was more disappointing, the Tyson fight or the Falcons in Denver? And a lot of guys are saying the Falcons because they had no expectations for the Tyson fight.
True.
And certainly we gave you all the scenarios where Denver would give us trouble defensively, and then all came to fruition. And then we were just terrible penalties. And we'll get more at 5 o'clock here, what Coach had to say. And left with more questions than answers. All right, my buddy Jamie, thanks to Jamie who set me up with this today. In case you're looking for a gig, maybe you're in education, maybe you want to do something involved with in Kennesaw State, Carl. Facility operations assistant, sports and recreation, one of the listings right now on Indeed, you know, the job application site.
Yeah.
Program coordinator, sports programs. Oh, that's interesting. Coordinator, athletic fields. Head coach, football. Kennesaw State University. You need to be someone who's demonstrated ability and success with an intercollegiate athletic program. Plans and directs the activities of athletic team. Yeah. Yes. Now, I know they cast a wide net up there at Kennesaw State, but you literally have the job for head coach.
Listed?
Listed on Indeed right now. I just found it. Thanks to my buddy Jamie who sent that to me earlier today.
Did you see the footage over the weekend with Coach Bohannon? It was absolutely incredible. And for those of you who didn't see it, you know, he got fired and he said, well, I didn't step down. Mike, he went through their walk-in, you know, and greeted every player this weekend. And literally, it was his chance to say goodbye because I'm assuming he didn't get a chance to do that. But he was like, still support you guys, love you guys, all those kids he recruited. And it was just a cool move by Coach Bohannon.
By the way, they're also looking for an assistant athletic director of compliance. And it, actually, I'm not going to say how much it pays, but it's not a bad chunk of change for somebody on their way up. You can go to Indeed. It's not a commercial for Indeed, but you can look it up. Hey, man, the house always wins. We know this. Best odds you'll get in Vegas, single deck blackjack, or playing a come bet or two come bets and the point at craps. You can look it up. That's the best odds you're going to get. The best odds you're going to get in Vegas was if you were betting Jake Paul to win.
Okay.
But that's not what the majority of the public did. Because Mike Tyson is still iconic.
Yes.
And as we found out on Friday's show, and I did it at the end of the show, it's amazing that people thought Tyson was going to win this fight. I'm like, guys, I had people killing me on Twitter on Friday. I said, I think Tyson fans are going to be disappointed. 67% of all the action was on Tyson.
They killed it.
That's insane. You just basically gave money to the casino.
Yeah, they killed it.
And that's look, as we know in sports, there's levels of interest. Maybe you're more passionate about this sport or that sport, but everybody thinks they know something about boxing, and they don't.
Well, I mean, you think you do until this kind of stuff happens, and guys show up, and you realize they're not even going to fight. I mean, they didn't fight, guys. They walked around the ring, and Tyson hobbled around the ring. But, yeah, Mike, that's crazy that a majority of the bets were put in on him.
Jake Paul's fights average 17 times more action and 13 times higher handle, in other words, more money coming in per event than standard boxing events. This is from the guy that runs ESPN Bet. So they're getting the ultimate casual fan from the YouTube and the younger generation. His business model works. Pick your spots, pick your fights, make coin. He'll never fight anybody who's really competitive in his prime, who's ranked, but he's making bank on this, and people are making money on betting it, apparently.
Hand over foot. He moves the needle, and whether you like it or not, that's the thing with him. And listen, this is really masterful of Jake Paul to think, who are we going to fight next? Tyson. Think about when that first came about and how many people around him probably said, you're crazy. Right. Come on, man. Mike Tyson? And then Tyson gets word, I'd love to fight. How much money am I going to talk about? $25 million. You wouldn't have fought him for $25 million?
Right.
Come on, for that? Yeah. For what we got?
Yeah. Now, again, the two-minute rounds, I knew it was hokey, but, you know, if you're a big – first off, full disclosure, Carl and I are huge boxing fans. There just ain't been a great boxing match in a while. I mean, I guess the only one that we might have gone to in the old days when we worked with HBO was the Munguia fight against Canelo back in the spring. You know, the undefeated Mexican fighter.
Yeah, that was a good fight.
But how many guys, you know, are aware of it? The casual fan doesn't know.
Yep.
But, yeah, so I'm saying, he'll get more. If Canelo ever did fight Jake Paul never fight him, he'll make twice what he made on the Munguia fight, maybe three times.
I agree. No, he would. I don't know if Canelo would do it, but, yeah, absolutely, you're right.
Hey, man, shocking news on one of America's most favorite television shows. And if you know, you know. And if you don't, not going to say it, but you know because you watched it. Everyone freaking out about what happened on Yellowstone.
I don't spoil. I can't spoil.
No, we got a 48-hour rule, but but the reaction has been swift and immense and overwhelming.
Yeah, I can't spoil it. But I'll say this. Actually, Randy asked me about this whole season and how frustrated I was, and I'm like, I'm not, because Sheridan's such a good writer and does such a great job with that show. He's got another show coming out. I think it's called Landman. Mm-hmm. He's got Billy Bob Thornton. It looks great. He's done all these shows, right? And so I'm not disappointed. Did I want Costner, obviously, to be a part of this? Yes, because that's what helped build this. He was such a dynamic character in building this whole thing.
Right.
But This is why we love the show, and I'll just say that. This is why we love it.
It's pretty cool. So, again, we've said too much, but if you haven't caught up on your Yellowstone yet, though, you can check it out. Hey, man, over the weekend, Carl and I, you played golf. You were in a tournament, right?
Yeah, we played. It wasn't great. I mean, I think, you know, you always want to blame the other guy in your group, like, man, I'm not teeing off after you. But we started off slow, and then we got going, and by that time, it was too late. So, plus, people cheat.
Right. So we have a group, and sometimes it's two foursomes, and sometimes guys tap in, tap out. Well, this week, we played out at Flat Creek on the south side. Down in Peachtree City. And one of my good friends is Pietro. Now, he's from Italy, works for a major company that has a business here in Southside, and he works, his son, big listener of our show. Pietro, English is not his first language. He obviously can function here. He lives here. He works here. But when he was playing bad golf, and he was having the worst run of his life, I learned Italian cuss words my grandfather never even taught me. I won't tell him on the radio. But he was literally off the tee, like 75 yards, worm burning. Ah, so God! I'm like, what? So you ever play somebody who's so bad, like the badness is contagious?
It is.
Sometimes it can get you out of your rhythm.
It does, yes.
And I will say this, after just driving in Italy on vacation, he even drives a golf cart like an Italian. He hits every pothole. My wife always tells me I drive like a maniac when I drive a golf cart. He comes screeching up to the spot. You know, he'll leave me. Pietro, I need a stick. Oh, so God.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be
All I can think of is that episode of Sopranos when Tony muscles in on Junior's doctor who's not treating his uncle well.
Right.
And he goes, hey, I got this new Callaway. I thought I'd give it to you. And then Furio kind of like makes him walk into the lake. And he goes, stupid, the effing again. This was my golf. Or see if you can find that line. You'd have to bleep it before the show's over. But that was – so if Pietro's out there listening, man, that was the worst round of golf I've ever seen. The good news was we did get some fireball going. I mean, as we had cigars, it's still a Sunday. It's still a Saturday afternoon. We're having a good time.
I love it when I play with people and they're like, hey, by the way, I'm not that good. And I always like go, it's okay. Like people freak out. Like nobody's getting paid out here, right? And then you say that, Mike, and then you get out there and you realize, holy crap, they are not that good. This is going to take forever.
You're always like, oh, come on, it can't be that bad. And I was, first off, I'm like a 17, 18 handicap. I'm in no position to give anyone pointers because I'm happy when I break 100 or break 98. But I'm sitting, I'm like, hey, Pietro, you're kind of living. No, I lift it up. I know, do not lift up. I'm sorry. Anyway, hey, one last nugget. I got this. Speaking of Italian, from Chris Vanini, who writes for The Athletic, final wrap on the college football weekend. I thought this was funny. Talking about how the new brackets may look coming up Tuesday night. He says, if Indiana beats Ohio State on the road, it has a case to be number one in the country.
They do.
Then I saw another tweet that said, from I forget who wrote it, said, if Indiana had to come to Athens, that will set their program back a decade.
It will.
Indiana would get such a whooping coming to stand. And by the way, Dusty Dvorak, who you saw on the Florida, hey, hats off, by the way. We should have given a game ball to Florida.
They played well, man.
Billy Napier has certainly reversed course. They beat LSU. You got Brian Kelly yelling at his own players again. We've seen that before. But the atmosphere at the Swamp with all the cell phones, same thing in Athens in the fourth to start the fireworks. There's no atmosphere in the country like what you see in SEC country. It does literally just mean more.
No, it does. And this is why home field advantage matters. This is why we look at those games before the season and we go, oh, they got them at home. Oh, they're on the road.
Right.
Ole Miss at Georgia, I don't think they play as well.
I'm with
that
you.
That game at home was different for them. Right. And so,
that would be one to see some Big Ten school come to Athens. That'd be something. Hey, man, our Dukes of Bell Guy Talk brought to you by Hey Man Ale from Oconee Brewing. Get it, man, while you can.
Please do. Coming up, what did Kirk have to say? He didn't throw a touchdown yesterday. That was one thing that was not good. But the entire embarrassing performance put on by the Falcons in a 38-6 loss has us wondering a few things. Find out what they are next.
Anyway, what am I going to do with it? I already got one, and Mr. Williams here, he don't play, right?
Stupid game.